eon of delirium passed before, unexpected, the vision came to him. So they were right. He had pondered blearily, looking up as a blaze of true light pierced the inky Venusian heat haze, stabbing his unaccustomed eyes, making them flow with tears. The ancients were right, after all. When death arrives, it's an angel that comes for you. The angel had bent closer. Behind a diamond-fringed face mask, fair hair had framed a face he dimly knew he should recognize. A familiar face, as if he had known it half his life. Lips moving. "So you're the Orly boy." The amplified voice had been soothing, though more efficient-sounding than angelic. "Not much to look at compared to your picture, but I'll reserve judgment till we get you cleaned up."
"He
had croaked. While hands drew him onto a stretcher, her face never leaving his sight, Tom felt life might slip away if it had. Working to pump remedies into his veins, she had kept on murmuring, "There now, it'll be all right. Say, don't you recognize me? We've never been introduced, but they've been nagging us to meet and get married." That first time, under the hellish sky of Venus, he had never once lost consciousness because of her. Now, though, all he had was a memory to cling to. Awareness bled away like bitter, irretrievable air. His first thought on coming around was a vague surprise that he was still breathing. Tom thought the battle storm was still going on until he realized that the shaking he felt was his own body. The roar in his ears was only a roar in his ears. His throbbing left arm was draped over a thick, horizontal stump. Scummy green water came up to his chin, lapping against the thinned face mask. His lungs ached, and the air was stale. He brought up his trembling right hand and pulled the mask down to hang around his neck. The filters had kept out the ozone stench, but he inhaled deeply, gratefully. At the last moment, he must have chosen immolation over suffocation, and struck out for the surface. Fortunately, the battle ended just before he arrived. Tom resisted the temptation to rub his itching eyes. The slime on his hands would do them no good. Tears welled at a biofeedback command, flushing most of the blinding mucus away. He looked up when he could see again. To the north, the volcano fumed on as ever. The cloud cover had parted somewhat, revealing numerous twisted banners of multicolored smoke. All around Tom, small crawling things were climbing out from the singed weeds, resuming their normal business of eating or being eaten. There were no longer battleships in the sky, blazing away at each other with beams of nova heat. For the first time, Tom was glad of the monotonous topography of the carpet of vines. He hardly had to rise in the water to see several columns of smoke pouring from slowly settling wrecks. As he watched, one faraway metal derelict exploded. The sound arrived seconds later in a series of muted coughs and pops, punctuated unsynchronously by bright flashes. The dim shape sank lower. Tom averted his eyes from the final detonation. When he looked back, he could detect nothing but clouds of steam and a faint hissing that fell away into silence. Elsewhere lay other floating fragments. Tom turned a slow circle, somewhat in awe of the destruction. There was more than enough wreckage for a mid-sized skirmish. He laughed at the irony, although it made his abused lungs hurt. The Galactics had all come to investigate a counterfeit Mayday signal, and they had brought their death feuds along to what should have been a mission of mercy. Now they were dead while he still lived. This didn't feel like the random capriciousness of Ifni. It was too like the mysterious, wry work of God himself. "Does this mean I'm all alone again?" he wondered. That would be rich. So much fireworks and one humble human the only survivor? Not for long, perhaps. The battle had caused him to lose almost all of the supplies he had struggled so hard to recover. Tom frowned suddenly. The message bombs. He clutched at his waist, and the world seemed to drop away. Only one of the globes remained. The others must have popped out in the struggle below the clinging vines. When his right hand stopped shaking, he carefully reached under his waistband and drew out the psi bomb, his very last link with Streaker, with Jillian. It was the verifier, the one that he was to set off if he thought the Trojan Seahorse should fly. Now he would have to decide whether to set off this one or none at all. Yes or no, were all he could say. I only wish I knew whose ships those were that fired on the Tandu. Tucking the bomb away, he resumed his slow turn. One wreck on the northwest horizon looked like a partially crushed eggshell. Smoke still rose from it, but the burning seemed to have stopped. There were no explosions, and it seemed not to be sinking any lower. All right, Tom thought. That will do as a goal. Looks intact enough to have possibilities. It may have salvageable gear and food. Certainly its shelter, if it's not too radioactive. It seemed only 5 kilometers away or so, though looks could be deceiving. A destination would give him something to do, at least. He needed more information. The wreck might tell what he needed to know. Tom pondered whether to try to go by land, trusting his weary legs to negotiate the weedscape, or to attempt the journey underwater, swimming from air hole to air hole, daring the unknown creatures of the deep. He suddenly heard a warbling whine behind him, turned, and saw a small spacecraft about 1 kilometer away, heading slowly northward, wavering bare meters above the ocean. Its shimmering shields flickered. Its drives heaved and faltered. Tom pulled up his mask and prepared to dive, but the tiny ship wasn't coming his way. It was passing to the west, sparks shooting from its stubby stasis flanges. Ugly black streaks stained its hull, and one patch had blistered and boiled away. Tom caught his breath as it passed. He had never seen a model like this before, but he could think of several races whose style would be compatible with the design. The scout dipped as its dying drives coughed. The high whine of the gravity generator began to fall. The boat's crew obviously knew it was done for. It banked to change course for the island. Tom held his breath, unable to help sympathizing with the desperate alien pilot. The boat sputtered along just above the weeds, then passed out of sight behind the mountain's shoulder. The faint crump of its landing carried over the whistling of the trade winds. Tom waited. After a few seconds, the boat's stasis field released with a loud concussion. Glowing debris flew out over the sea, the fragments quenched in water or burned slowly into the weeds. He doubted anyone could have gotten away in time. Tom changed goals. His long-range destination was still the eggshell ship, floating a few miles away, but first, he wanted to sift through the wreckage of that scout boat. Maybe there would be evidence there to make his decision easier. Maybe there would be food. He tried to crawl up onto the weeds, but found it too difficult. He was still shaking. All right, then. We'll go under the sea. Probably all moot anyway. I might as well enjoy the scenery. Chapter 52 Aki. The son of a blood-gorged lamprey just wouldn't let go. Aki was exhausted. The metallic tang of the water mixed with the taste of bile from his fore stomach as he swam hard to the southeast. He wanted desperately to rest, but he knew he couldn't afford to let his pursuer cut away at his lead. Now and then he caught sight of Cathajan, about 2 kilometers behind him,